Mark, can only recommend it.
Thank you so much for joining us. We were supposed to be talking to you last week, but because of our special on Nelson Mandela, you very kindly were convinced that coming in almost on the week that we all break up, to talk about the robot. Now, Mark, do you work in this building?
Yes, I do, and we also have another lab a little bit further away.
Because in days gone by, when the building was arranged in a slightly different fashion, I would quite often pop up to what we used to call the faculty office, which was on the third floor, and find your colleagues popping out from behind things with sort of robots that they were testing late at night. Is that what you still get onto up there? Because we don't have access to the third floor now.
Well, we still do a lot of stuff with robots. I'm not sure that we're still doing that sort of you're referring to.
I think he was just making sure he didn't collide with anybody, but it was very funny. You'd walk along the corridor and suddenly fly past you, and it was really weird. Mark, let's give you a proper title. Mark Hanheide.
Yep.
And you work in computing.
That's correct.
Which is on the top floor of the building in which Siren finds itself. And the reason I've got you down here is we had from Marie in our press office a little thing saying Linda had done rather well. And I thought, OK, Linda, robots, we've got to find out from Mark what Linda was all about. But this is part of a massively funded project that you've been working on called Strands. Does Strands stand for something?
Yeah, it's got a very complicated title. Actually, I have to read it because I can't remember it myself. So it's spatiotemporal representations activities for cognitive control in long-term scenarios. So what's that about?
Yeah.
Well, clearly, this is having robots that can actually run for a very long time and actually make sense of the world from this. So if you look at robots today, most of the robots either work 24/7 in factories, and they do the very same thing all over again. And then those robots that basically are research robots, and they basically are turned on, they are shown off to somebody. They're probably engaged in some experiments for 50 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that. And we're trying to actually get into, like, getting the best from both worlds, let's say. So we're going to develop research robots that can actually make sense of the world through long-term experience.
Now, are these robots that basically learn about their environment as they work in their environment, that know that there's a door there or there's a corner there and things like that, that they have, you can program to start with, but they then build up an awareness of where they are.
That's exactly right, yes. So the main idea is really like a bit like a human, and one of our scenarios actually is in security. And imagine like you've got a security guard and he's patrolling that very same building every day again and again. So they definitely want to, they develop some kind of common sense. They know how the world looks like. Right, and that's what we're trying to replicate in some sense. So the robot actually does some patrolling and at the same time learns about the environment and then will be able to spot if there's something wrong.
So it recognises changes having acclimatised to its environment. So that's the concept of intelligence.
That's exactly right, yeah.
If it reacts upon the change, that's the intelligence, I suppose.
That is the intelligence. Yeah. Well, if it's just sometimes it's just flagging up, there's a door open here. That was never the case. Why is the door open? Why is there a box right there in the corridor that's not supposed to be there? And we don't have to program each of these little bits in there, say, look for boxes, but actually it develops this kind of sense about the world, what it should look like.
And, of course, it can go into areas where you wouldn't want to, first of all, send a human being.
That's, of course, one of the usual applications for robots, yeah.
Well, and we remember, I mean, Nigel and I are old enough to remember the very early bomb disposal robots they had in Northern Ireland that they would send in and quietly and carefully and had a long umbilical behind it. That's the very early, the very basic form of them, because you wouldn't want a human being to get that close to...
Yes, it was like a little mini-tracked tank, wasn't it?
Yeah. Quite amazing.
But those are all remote controlled, right? That's basically a bit like a remote-controlled car.
Yes.
So you're so much more sophisticated. We'll get round to Linda in a minute, but doing the research, which was thorough, we got sent a link to a YouTube video, which I will give the details of, because I think it's absolutely cute. And there are three... How am I going to describe them? Three moving things which have eyes, have what looks like plastic eyes, and they're moving about one of the corridors upstairs, I think, remembering what it used to look like up there when we were allowed up there. What immediately struck me was seeing the future as described in the 50s, where housewives were going to be released from the drudgery of hoovering and vacuuming and ironing, and you would have a house robot. And there's an uncanny resemblance. Was that just an accident, or did you design it because it needs to have some sort of human look to it?
Well, it doesn't have to have human look in order to be useful, but you will find that many people actually like this kind of human-like appearance, and they're much more open actually than to interact with a robot, because they know where to look. So when there's when it's got eyes, that's kind of a natural behaviour, that you actually look into the eyes. And as we're going to deploy these robots also in some elderly care facilities, it's important that they're able to interact with humans in a more or less natural way. And so, yeah, it's kind of, well, you could say it's kind of natural that we design them in a way like humans are. It's still quite far off. This is a very technical design. There's actually robots that try to resemble human appearance much more. But in general, just to help the interaction, to make people feel more comfortable around robots, it's quite a usual thing that you try to design them, well, somewhat cute, somewhat more human-like.
Of course, we're used to it from the Star Wars. There's R2-D2 and C-3PO or whatever, 3P, whatever it was, the humanate one.
Yeah.
So we are getting more acclimatised that. You say putting these into care homes, that's a heck of a leap from what you're testing upstairs to... what sort of jobs would they do in the care home?
Well, this robot doesn't have arms, so it cannot really... basically to help directly with the patient. Now, we don't care. We don't want to do that. We don't want to replace humans in the care. What we want is actually robots that can help there, that can carry things, so it's got something like a tray, it can help actually assist there, deliver certain items, for instance. And as we develop these robots to have some kind of a common sense, this robot will actually help to detect deviations again, something that is unusual.
So if a patient's fallen out of bed or something like that, or is not where they expect to find, they can alert quickly.
Yes, or when you find someone actually strolling the corridors in the middle of the night, what you don't expect, then you can actually call for some carer to sort out what's going on here.
Would there be any speech from this robot? I mean, would they be able to say, "Hello, Gladys, what are you doing here?" or something to that effect?
Yeah, well, the robot can already speak. At the moment, it's got very limited capabilities and actually to understand when you talk to it. But it can already speak at the moment, so that's what we've been doing so far. Of course, as you said, it's quite a long way to actually deploy it into care homes and to have a natural interaction with the people there. But as I said, it's more like a support tool. It's not really there to replace the human.
And that's the crucial thing, is that we are not going to end up like iRobot with armies of these things taking over the world. This is not the point. This is because you deal with artificial intelligence, and there have been some fantastic films. There is AI, and there's iRobot, and there are all sorts of things like that, which we as the ordinary people, there's an element of fear lurking here. You're the front-facing smiley face which says, "Don't worry, it's all right. They're not evil."
Well, they are not evil as long as we don't make them evil. That's the very clear thing. There's definitely people that I would say going in the wrong direction with robots and trying to actually use them for tasks that they're not supposed to. Well, I think they should not be doing. But in the end, basically, they are just tools. And they're just probably more advanced tools, but your phones are getting more intelligent already. And
they know where you are. I get in the car, it tells me how long to home. I mean, I haven't told it to do anything, and it does it automatically.
And cars are nothing else than robots, actually, because they have all the features of a robot. They're getting smarter. Mm-hmm. They can move about, so there's not much a difference between actually the robot that we have here and a car these days, I would say.
Nigel, your métier is surgery, and you were talking beforehand about some surgical processes are better
using 3D robot surgery. That's right.
But I immediately picked up on this wonderful opportunity for your hard-pressed staff in your wards, who can't always be there, that if they're just gently patrolling up and down a ward and sense that there is something wrong, somebody's not in a bed or somebody's on the floor, this could be a terrific aid, I would have thought.
Well, I suppose it could, but the question is, are there other ways you can do it? For example, having a camera in the side of the room like ours. And people observing it. But the lovely example Mark used was about a robot taking a tray of food to a patient, especially as we've had recent issues very clearly in the press whereby patients are starving in hospitals because no one's noticing that people aren't taking the food off the trays.
Yeah, and of course the robot.
And the robot, recognising changes in time and space, will say, "Oh, I've been here 10 minutes, nothing's happened. Strange." Prod patient, is patient awake?
Well, they wouldn't be able to, because...
Move on to the next algorithm.
Linda doesn't have an arm, does she?
Yes, well, you know, some will, some won't.
That's still...
Early days.
Early days.
Yes.
Now, Linda won something, didn't she?
Yes, so it's been 2 weeks.
Two or three weeks ago. Yes. Yeah.
We had what's called a robot marathon actually, and it was part of the Euro Robotics Week, which like a lot of robotics lab in Europe basically did something, and we set ourselves the goal to have a robot marathon. So having robots actually run for a very long time. That was kind of our first milestone in the project. So there was a total of 5 robots competing all across Europe on their respective sites against each other to figure out who was the robot that covers the longest distance, runs for the longest period of time without the need of any expert intervention. So whenever there was an expert, when we actually had to rescue the robot from some strange situation, then the counter was reset and we had to start all over again.
Oh, right.
And we were very happy that Linda actually won this thing. So we covered about 45 kilometres, so that's 30 miles, I think, and in 48 hours, fully autonomous operation. And that was quite an achievement.
On the same charge of the battery?
No.
Could she stop and
also
charge
had
herself?
To autonomously recharge. She's got a charging station.
She plugged herself in?
Yes, mm-hmm. So basically has to go there and then recharge herself. So
this is great.
So we have to get... We can run for about 10 hours and the robot will actually notice, well,
oops,
I'm hungry. I need to go back home and get something. And so... That's when it actually will go back and rest there for about 5 hours to get full charge.
You're bursting to jump in here.
No, I just love the idea of a sort of self-charging character that does a marathon for two reasons. One, because the ancient Greeks thought about automata and robots, and we're back to marathon again. Yes. And secondly, because Linda can now have a T-shirt saying, I'm Linda, I go all the way, which I think is wonderful.
Yes. I don't think we were thinking along those lines a moment ago, but it's fantastic, and the kudos that this brings to the work that you are doing. I know I've been slightly light on it, but I mean, we have to say that some of the work you do here at the Computing Centre in the faculty of the school, or whatever we're calling it this week, I never remember, is not just groundbreaking, it's leading the world.
Yep, this is basically part of a European project. It's one of those big European research projects in robotics. Actually, it's just been voted as one of the best, the 5 best, basically. And we have partners in the UK, so we have partners in Leeds and in Birmingham, and then we have partners in Germany, in Austria.
And that's actually the crucial thing, isn't it? The joining up of all of these institutions and using the technology that allows you to run things like the marathon event joined up. I was talking to Doris Wells-Papanek earlier in the year about a completely different type of thing, but that was using the tremendous linkages that there are between institutions, that you're not sitting like perhaps Louis Pasteur was 120-odd years ago on his own with just his lab and his people. There are lots of other people who can add to and move on with the development of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. You need this expertise from so many people. You need the best of the best, let's say, to actually get to where we are. So this robot runs about like 100 components. Imagine like when you've got your computer, you start Microsoft Word or something, that is one application, it's one program, and this robot runs about 100 of those in parallel to actually see the different aspects of the world, to see where humans are, to create a map, to know where it is. And all these things, well, they are all developed actively by many, many people. And so we're trying to actually get the best people in there to get where they get the best software onto their robot.
I suppose the bottom line, I have to say, is the investment is, what, 7.2 million in this project. When will... And I'm always going to ask this question, and it's the really nerdy question. When do I, as the consumer, as the punter, when will I actually see the output of all of this work physically in our real world out there, when I perhaps go and visit an elderly relative in hospital or in a care centre? How soon is that likely to happen?
Well, there is not one time when you start seeing it. Usually you can actually see these at the moment already. There's robots in hospitals already wandering about, doing that kind of work that we were sketching, basically delivering food. But they, right now, they just kind of go on their pre-programmed routes all over again. And then they will slowly, they will actually develop more kind of this intelligence, more of this awareness that we are trying to get into them. There's already vacuum cleaners, robotic vacuum cleaners, or lawnmowers.
Yeah. Yes, seen them.
Around, right?
So
they don't learn. They work, but they don't learn. And they will just improve if they can actually use some of the technologies we're developing. So it's not like there's one moment and now the robots we're going to roll out to the world. It's happening. It's a process that actually is underway.
So to be pedantic, when does an automaton become a robot?
That is also a very blurry line. I cannot really tell you.
Just hit him with the hard question.
Okay,
right.
Sorry.
No.
That's very interesting.
It's very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of different definitions of robots, and Well, the most simple one is actually is a robot that a robot is something, a machine that can perceive, make sense of the world, reason about it, and then act in it. Mm. And that's the most simple one that you can do.
And an automaton is something that does something on a pre-programmed chain of commands.
And will not veer from that, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah, just keep things
because the reason that you just brought to mind some of my earlier work, my earlier video work, of which I'm not overly proud, but I remember going to RS Components, which is an electrical component company in Corby, just as they had installed the most unbelievably sophisticated picking system. And that's really an automaton, because you only had one person at a control panel who pressed a couple of buttons, and machines just went off and got whatever it was from these vast racks. That's, again, the basic level of automaton, but wasn't a robot because it would only do what he told it to. He couldn't the week later say, oh, do you remember that thing I got from bin 47? Can you go and get me another one? It wouldn't do that. But I'm assuming that perhaps when the order comes through again, it will say, don't have to worry about it, I'll go and get it for you. That's the difference, isn't it?
That is definitely the difference between robots and intelligent robots, I would say. People would still claim that these warehouse systems that you were referring to before, they're also kind of robots. There's, as I said, it really depends. It's a bit of a sales term to some extent, yes. Right? Robots sell well, and then if you want to say something is a robot, that is perfectly possible for you to do that. As I said, a car is a robot, as far as I'm concerned.
It is the way some people drive it, I've noticed. Yeah, anyway, certainly. Mark, my final question, have you got any more numb thumbscrew questions to ask him, Nigel, or
no, I think that was quite enough, apart from solving a problem that Andrew and I had earlier at lunchtime, and it shows what a sad life we had. We were eating our sandwich and our coffee, and we were trying to determine the origin of the word robot.
Yes.
Because there seem to be various views about that. One is the any Slavic language, the word robot.
Yeah, that's one I know.
Robot, as in computer, nie robotaje, the computer doesn't work. And there are also theories about a Czechoslovakian play about robots in the 1920s. And I think that's about all I can tell you about that. Yes, because there was a man called Karel Šápek, who in 1920 had a play called Rossum's Universal Robot. You couldn't make this stuff up, really. And somebody, Alex, who was sat in the same office, suddenly came out with this amazing quote. And it was absolutely fantastic.
It was
encyclopedic.
I just sat there, because we were working on this Russian line. I thought, that sounds rather good, the Russian, Ukraine and all the rest of it. No, and then he says, no, completely wrong. Yeah. And then gives us the first quotation for robot.
But interestingly, Karol, the man, wanted to call it a labori, or worker.
A worker.
And his brother, who happens to be a painter, said, no, why not use a Slavic word, meaning work.
Worker.
Or onus, or task, or drudge.
We've already, talking of interaction.
Yes.
We have interaction. One of our team, Ed, says, could Linda do my Christmas shopping, do you think? If you told her what to go and get, could you say, I mean, in the future?
In the future, well, yes. The question is, do you want the robot to do that for you? Just come on, buy something from Amazon. But certainly, I mean, leaving out that the robot can't actually go outdoors at the moment because it's got wheels, I believe it could work fairly well indoors and so on.
And it's got sleepy wheels.
But in general, I mean, this is exactly the thing. If the robot actually, if you have got a personal robot that will learn about your own preferences, then you can actually send it off to get something that you like. And how does it know what you would like? Well, it can only learn this by actually being with you for an extended period of time and not kind of get its data deleted every 15 minutes ago.
And Breakfast Jeff has popped a little note into my inbox. He said, clever stuff, we need a breakfast robot. Zzz, zzz, zzz. So it means the breakfast robot would be sitting here and Jeffrey would be at home controlling it. Not so much fun, really, that. Now, my final question to you, Mark. Thank you ever so much indeed for coming in. And we've just had a fantastic time because Nigel and I have been trying to work out where we want to go on this little journey. For Christmas, what do you buy somebody who has designed the ultimate robot like you? So what do you want? Do you want something much more analog? What is on your Christmas list?
You may not get it, of course.
I was hoping that.
Go on.
It's usually when people ask, like,
no. And here's what I prepare before. No, I can't do that. So you surround yourself by the latest, all this wonderful stuff.
Well, what I want is actually support to get to see my family back over there in Germany, and that's sort of like these simple things. That's actually, not getting away from the robots for some time and actually enjoying some family time. I think that's
Mark,
the interesting thing.
Brilliant answer. Absolutely brilliant answer. What will you do with Linda? Will she be quiet over the holiday period, or do you unplug her, or do you disengage her drive system? Because I got a feeling I'm going to come in here to do a programme when the university is, quote, shut, and find Linda wandering around.
I think what he's getting at is that after Christmas we'd like to come and do a visit.
You're perfectly invited to come over, yes.
We'd love to.
I think we will probably give Linda a rest over Christmas as well, because it's not very interesting for her to keep on patrolling in there.
Yes, she'll get bored.
There's not much happening, so we might well give her a rest.
Nothing worse
won the marathon
than a bored robot. And, I suppose the other question we haven't asked is why she called Linda.
Yeah, so we had this coding event where a lot of people came here, and that was our kickoff to the project, and then it was all about, well, what's the robot's name? And so we had to be quickly coming up with something. So we came up with Linda just as a reference to Lincoln, so to the ancient name of Lindum Colonia.
Oh, brilliant.
And that was it. And now people trying to actually make sense of the word. So one of my colleagues suggested that Linda actually means Linda is not doing anything. I'm not sure if that's the right thing.
NDA.
Yeah.
That's a cracker, isn't it? I love that. I just couldn't think.
Loves intercalated neural directed activities.
Oh, yeah, well, that was a second on the list,
okay.
Really. I'm going to have to go and lie down in the quiet corner after this overlay. It's been fantastic, Mark. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Next time something exciting happens like this, or there's an update on Linda and her friends, you will pop in and tell us all about it.
Sure, I will.
And we'll watch this one as I'm sure it will develop more and more. Mark and Heidi, thank you very much indeed, and a very happy Christmas, and let's hope you do get home to see your family.